ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, chapter 3, Liberation from the Illusory Energy, texts 15 and 16. We can all chant together in unison the first one. Indriyani manobuddhi sahavaikarikarnipa pravishyanti yahankaram Swagunerahamatmani. My dear king, the material senses and intelligence merge into false ego in the mode of passion from which they arose. And the mind, along with the demigods, merges into false ego in the mode of goodness. Then the total false ego, along with all of its qualities, merges into the Mahatattva. Book 16, word meanings, Esha, this, Maya, material energy, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Lord, Sarga, of creation, Sthiti, maintenance, Anta, and dissolution of this universe, Karini, the agent, Trivarna, consisting of three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, Varnita, has been described. Asmabihi, by us, kim, what, bhuyaha, further, shrotum, to hear, ichchasi, do you wish? Esha maya bhagavata, sargasthityantakarini, Trivarna varnitasmabhi kim bhuya shrotum ichyasi esha maya bhagavata sargasthityantakarini Trivarna varnitasmabhi kim bhuya shrotum ichyasi esha maya bhagavata sagastityantakarini vivarna varnitasmabhi kim bhuya shrotum ichyasi
Samaya Bhagavata Sargasthityantakarini Vivarna Varnitasmabhi Kim Bhuya Shrotam Ichyasi Samaya Bhagavata Sargasthityantakarini Trivarna Varnitasmabhi Kim Bhuya Shrotam Ichyasi Esha Maya Bhagavata Sargasthityantakarini Vivarna Varnitasmabhi Nimbhuya Shrotam Ichyasi
Ladies.
Esha Maya Bhagavata Sargasthityantakarini Vivarna Vamikasma Bihi. Nimhuya Sutum Ishtisi. Ishamaya Bhagavata. Prakasityanta Karini. Vivarna Vamikasma Bihi. In Buya Sputum Ikshishi.
Translation. I have now described Maya, the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This illusory potency, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is empowered by the Lord for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material universe. Now, what more do you wish to hear? So this purport is quite technical, and I'm going to stick to the script today. So we're going to, Srila Prabhupada used to say, scrutinizingly study my books. So we'll do a little scrutinizing here today. I'll try not to scrutinize the editing, although I have a propensity to do that sometimes. Javita Prabhu's not here to defend himself. So I'm going to read and comment as I go along. King Nimi had expressed to the Navayogendras his fear of the illusory potency of the Lord and had requested a detailed explanation of Maya so that he could avoid becoming a victim at her hands. Now Sri Antariksha, this word Antariksha means to look within. Sri Antariksha, having described the illusory potency, is suggesting that the king inquire about the means to become totally free of Maya's influence. Not waiting for the king to ask such a question, Sri Antariksha himself is suggesting, now that you have heard about Maya's influence, you should inquire about the process of becoming free of such influence. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, that is the significance of Sri Antariksha's question, Kim Buya Shrotam Ichasi. What more do you wish to hear? So this is like we say, hint, hint. That's what he's doing here. Hint, hint. What's the next question? Now, I just told you about Maya. What's the next question? Huh? How do I get out of Maya? Yeah. Well, that's what he's suggesting. According to Sridhar Swami. The following is a summary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's explanation of the process of annihilation described in the previous verses. So now it's going to get technical. So now this says here an explanation of the process of annihilation. And when you start reading it, it's not about annihilation. It's about creation. So it's about annihilation, but it's starting at the beginning. First it talks about creation, the going out. And then it comes back and talks about the coming in, the annihilation. So it's a little, kind of get confused, at least I did in the beginning when I first started reading it. So let me read. This is a summary of the explanation of the process of annihilation described in the previous verses. Now we'll see at the end of this paragraph, this is also taken from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is based on, the same ideas are being presented here as are presented by Kapila Dev in his instructions to his mother, chapter 26 of the third canto. 26 is his second chapter, the second chapter of Kapila's teachings. The first chapter is 25, which is about devotional service. And then 26, he gets into the creation. So this is based on that, and I'll maybe reading some of that. Now, just to set the stage here a little bit, this is the kind of thing maybe we don't like to hear about so much. But the Bhagavatam has 10 subjects. It covers 10 subjects. The first two are Sarga and Visarga, which is the primary creation, the creation of the 16 constituents of matter, or 16 of the 24, and then subsequent creation, Sarga and Visarga. This word, this prefix V, by the way, I think it comes up in this purport. V means Vishesha. It's usually translated as Vishesha. Vishesha means distinction. Usually when you have the prefix V on some word, it means it's making some distinction about that word. It's making some special point about the word, you might say. Just like Krishna is called Lord Krishna in the Govinda prayers, Vishesha Shobham. He has distinct beauty, Vishesha Shobham. And a word like Vimudha means special mudha. So we find this word comes up often. So here we're going to hear about Sarga and Visarga. Especially here we're going to hear about Sarga, the original creation. Visarga is more from when Brahma begins, and then he expands everything out. So this is one of the subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam, so it's important to hear. And when I listen to the Bhagavatam a lot, there are certain parts that I listen to that it's hard for me to keep listening to them. Like usually I skip over, when I get to the Hellish Planets chapter, I just kind of fast forward to the next one. So some of these chapters are a little hard to listen to. But we hear in the Bhagavatam in many places that even things that appear to be mundane, they have a purifying effect. For example, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, we get creation, where we hear about the creation of all the different species, these amazing, the daughters of Daksha, they're married to Kasyapa. Kasyapa married 17 daughters of Daksha. So before what they created, the insects and the snakes and everything, even cities are created by these daughters of Daksha. So in the beginning there it says, there's one verse where it says that it's very auspicious to hear the names of these ladies. Because there are mothers, actually. That's one reason why it's auspicious. Because from them come humans, human beings also. So the word there is, did I write it down? Oh yeah, I should remember. Shankarani, like Shankar. Shankarani. So it's translated, probably translated, I think, in the word for word as pleasing. But in his actual translation of the verse, he says very auspicious. He says very auspicious to hear the name, just to hear their names. And the same thing with the universe. When we hear about the description of the universe, you think, well, what is purifying about that? You hear about Himalaya or something. How is that going to purify me? So here's a little something. This is from 5th canto, 16th chapter, which is a description of Jambudvipa. And this is verse number 3. When the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his external feature, made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form. So whenever you talk about creation, we're really talking, you can say we're talking about the universal form. Often when there's a description of the creation, then it's talked about in terms of a personality, the Mahapurusha. So we have this conception of the universe as like a form. So these are kind of, you might say, in the same category, whether you're studying the universal form or you're studying how the creation actually works. In either case, you're meditating, in a sense, on the universal form. So here it says, when the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his external feature made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form, it is brought, the mind, is brought to the mode of pure goodness. In that transcendental position, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the modes of nature. O my Lord, please describe vividly how that form, which covers the entire universe, is perceived. So Prabhupada gives a very nice purport here. He covers some, it just emphasizes this point. And when you meditate on the Supreme Personality of God, it has this, oh, he says here, Maharaj Pariksit had already been advised by his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, to think of the universal form of the Lord. Now this comes, what Prabhupada is referring to here, as soon as Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking, now what is he doing? Shukadeva has been asked by Pariksit Maharaj, what should I do? What should a person do in life, and especially when he's about to die? So the first instruction, what is the name of that chapter? Second canto, chapter 1? The first step in God realization, right? The first step in God realization. So what is the first step in God realization that he teaches? He tells Pariksit Maharaj that one should go to a secluded place and one should sit down and concentrate the mind. So basically he tells him to go practice yoga. Then he says, what do you meditate on? Then he tells him to meditate on the universal form. He gives a whole description of the universal form. That's what that chapter is about. The first stage in God realization is about meditating on the universal form. And then the next chapter is about meditating on the super soul. So first you meditate on what you can see outside, and you think of that as God, in a sense. And then the next chapter is go within, meditate on the super soul within the heart. So here Prabhupada says the preacher had already been asked to meditate on the universal form. And then it says, Prabhupada continues, following the advice of his spiritual master, he continuously thought of that form. So apparently while he was listening to the Bhagavatam, he was meditating on the universal form. The universal form is certainly material, but because everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately nothing is material. So then Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami, Prapanchikataya Bhutya Hari Sambandhi Vastuna, that we should use everything in Krishna's service, don't see it as material, because it's all Krishna's energy. So that's a little something here. There are other things. I mean, if it comes to my mind as I'm reading this, I'll go read something else. So now let's dive into this. So now we're going to be hearing about the annihilation of the material of Maya, how Maya undertakes the annihilation. So it begins here. Let's see. Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the presiding deity of consciousness, which becomes manifest within the Mahatattva. So I was thrown off right away. I said, what does this have to do with anything? We're hearing about the creation. So what is this about Vasudeva? So the idea, I think you'll see as this unfolds, is the very important point, is that nothing happens without Vasudeva, without Krishna being within the Purusha. There's a section in the second canto where Lord Brahma is speaking to Narada Muni, the fifth chapter, very technical chapter about the creation. By the way, this is pointed out in the commentary to the Tattvasandarbha, which is Gopi Vrindavan Prabhu wrote based on Baladeva Vidyabhushana, that when Lord Brahma is speaking to Narada here, he's speaking the Bhagavatam. First, Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma in four verses, and then Brahma expanded on it when he spoke to Narada. He spoke that, it's something like 100-something verses in the fifth, sixth chapter, something like that, in the first canto, second canto of the Bhagavatam. So this is Brahma speaking the Bhagavatam to Narada. And then later, of course, Vyasadeva is in his dilemma, what to do. He's not happy. He's written all the Vedas and he's not happy. Narada comes there. So then at that time, actually, Narada speaks some Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva. Or at least inspires him within the heart to meditate and see the purport of the Bhagavatam. And then, of course, Vyasadeva speaks to Shukadeva, and then his son, Shukadeva, and then Shukadeva speaks to Briksha Maharaj and Shonaka Rishi, and then we're hearing the Bhagavatam through the mouth of Shonaka Rishi from the beginning. So this, we can see how this parampara goes. So when Brahma is speaking to Narada, he talks about Vasudeva there. Oh no, this is from this. I'm sorry. This is from Kapiladeva's instructions. Let me just read this one verse. It says here, because this is taken. This discussion again is taken from Kapiladeva. It's based on that and what we just read. It says the mode of goodness, which is the clear, sober status of understanding the personality of Godhead, and which is generally called Vasudeva or consciousness, becomes manifest in the Mahatattva. So this is right at the beginning. So here we kind of get two ideas about consciousness. This sounds like consciousness sort of detached from any personality. But here we're hearing that Vasudeva is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what I started to mention was there's a description of the universal form where after the different parts are created, then they like form into a person, but the person doesn't do anything. Nothing is instigated. There's no activity. So it says, you know, that the sight went back in and the hearing went back in and so on like that. You get the whole person being built up, but nothing happens. It's only when Vasudeva enters, when consciousness enters, then the universal form comes to life, you might say. So this is the idea that we're getting here. None of this is going to happen without the influence of Vasudeva, without his touch. So, let me read this again. Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of God, is the presiding deity of consciousness, which becomes manifest within the Mahatattva. By further transformations of the Mahatattva, the threefold false ego appears as follows. So this is where I got, another place I got tripped up. Because when you read this sentence, the threefold false ego appears as follows. You think the next sentence is going to tell you how the false ego appears. But that's not what happens. So we're going to hear is how the false ego creates something else, how something is created out of the false ego. So I was thinking, well, one way to read this might be, well, that's how it appears or makes its appearance. It makes its appearance when you can see its effect. So that I can justify the editing of the sentence by reading it in that way. By further transformations of the Mahatattva, the threefold false ego appears as follows. One, from Vaikartika, false ego in the mode of goodness, appears the 11th sense, the mind, whose presiding deity is Aniruddha. So there seems to be a step missing here. We heard about Mahatattva, now we're hearing, the Mahatattva is false ego. Sometimes Prabhupada explains it to be the ahankar of all the jivas in total, brought together, amalgamated. So at some point, the three modes of material nature enter into this Mahatattva. They're part of the Mahatattva at this point that we're reading about here. So they manifest in different, they create in a certain way. The modes of material nature create in these different ways. When the false ego or ahankar, which is, you might say, is the essence of the Mahatattva, is with the mode of goodness, touched by the mode of goodness, or infiltrated by the mode of goodness, then the 11th sense, the mind, whose presiding deity of Aniruddha appears. So the mind appears with false ego and goodness. That's the essential point to remember here. False ego in touch with goodness, that's where the mind comes from. From Taijasa, false ego in the mode of passion, comes intelligence, whose presiding deity is Pradyumna, and the five working senses and five knowledge-acquiring senses with their various presiding deities. So the second thing is false ego with passion. From false ego with passion comes intelligence and the five working senses and the five knowledge-acquiring senses. So I know you're not going to remember all of this, but we're supposed to hear it, so we're hearing it. And we're trying to look. My whole point is not to just read through this, but to spend a little time actually trying to think about it. That in itself is purifying. It's an activity in the mode of goodness, so it's helpful for us. So the third thing, now what are these? These are transformations of the threefold false ego. When the false ego is touched by each mode of material nature, different things happen. So first, goodness brings the mind, then passion brings intelligence and the working and knowledge acquiring senses. And then the third, false ego in the mode of, from false ego in the mode of ignorance arises the subtle form of sound. And from that sound, or shabda, all the material elements gradually become manifest, beginning with ether and the sense of hearing. So this is where we get now the material elements. When false ego is in touch with the mode of ignorance, you can see, you might think, well, ignorance is more gross. It's not as subtle as the mind and the intelligence and the senses even. So to get the gross material elements, the five Mahabhutas, then we get, this comes from false ego and goodness, in ignorance. And the presiding deities, now each of these constituents of nature has a presiding deity. You can read about them in the Bhagavatam. Some of them are quite interesting, actually. I'll just mention that the couple places where Lord Vishnu comes up. Lord Vishnu is in charge of locomotion, or our legs, walking, Lord Vishnu. Indra is in charge of the arms. There's one place, it comes up, I think, three times, this basic description, where Lord Vishnu is mentioned in this context. And one place, Prabhupada says, not the Supreme Lord Vishnu, but the demigod Vishnu. He says it one time, but two other times he doesn't say that. So maybe it's not always the same, as we know. There are so many creations going on constantly. So I'll continue here. The presiding deity of these three divisions of false ego is Sankarsana. So overseeing, even though each of these divisions or constituents of nature has its own presiding deity, the overall presiding deity is Sankarsana. This description is taken from chapter 26 of the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, verses 21, 27, 28, 30, 31, 32, and 35. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, so what we just heard about the creation, basically, basic creation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead's external potency, Maya, causes the birth, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. She is tricolored, red, white, and black. So this is the kind of thing when you read, you think, literally she's tricolored? What does this mean, she's tricolored? Or is it just a way of thinking about it? I don't know. There's no elaboration. A lot of times there aren't purports on these things. Actually, I went to the sixth canto. I was thinking, I wonder what Vishwanath says about these creations of trees and snakes and all these things from these ladies' wombs. He doesn't say anything. He just puts it there with no purport. So anyway, in her, okay, she is tricolored, Maya Devi. In her red feature, the material nature is created. Okay, you can see creation is passion, right? So red. Red is considered a passionate color, actually. In her red feature, the material nature is created. In white, it endures goodness, white. And in black, it is annihilated, darkness, annihilation. You can see the sense, the common sense of these three colors, at least. The Mahat Tattva arises from this Maya, and from the Mahat Tattva come the three varieties of false ego mentioned above. So just reviewing what we just read. At the time of annihilation, the five great elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, merge into the false ego and the mode of ignorance. So now here we see, it's like a telescope. It goes out and it comes back in. So now this is how it comes back in. It's just reversing the process. Now you have the material elements and they go back into false ego and the mode of ignorance. Of course, it's very detailed. In places in the Bhagavatam, you hear the step-by-step description of this. This is just a summary. Okay, let's see. The ten senses and intelligence merge into false ego and passion, and the mind, along with the demigods, merges into false ego and goodness, which then merges into Mahat Tattva, which further takes shelter of the Prakriti, or unmanifest Pradhan. So the Pradhan is called Prakriti. Pradhan is material, is the Mahat Tattva in the completely inert state. So it all goes back to the Pradhan. As described above, each of the gross elements is wound up when its distinguishing quality is removed. Well, this is interesting, I thought. The element then merges into the previous element. This can be understood as follows. In space or ether, there is the quality of sound. And I think most of you are probably familiar with this idea, but this is a nice review of it. So in ether, you have only sound. In air, there are the qualities of sound and touch. In fire, there are sound, touch, and form. You just see, well, you can't see air, you can't see ether, but fire, you can see. So you get form added. In water, there are sound, touch, form, and taste. The tongue is connected with taste, too, and then there's water there, saliva. And in earth, there are sound, touch, form, taste, and aroma in earth. So with the element earth, it's easy to get confused with the earth planet, the earth, because both of the words are used. We're talking about the element earth, which is some subtle thing, actually. It's not exactly dirt. But anyway, it contains aroma. Therefore, from ether down to earth, each element is distinguished by the addition of its own unique quality called guna visheshim. Oh, here's the vishesha. I thought it was in this purport somewhere. So it has a particular guna, distinguishing guna. It's called this guna visheshim that the others don't have, or combination of gunas that the others don't have, qualities. When that quality is removed, an element becomes non-different from its previous element and thus merges into it. For example, when great winds take away from the earth, take aroma away from the earth, earth contains only sound, touch, form, and taste, and thus becomes non-different from water into which it merges. You see the idea? You started with all five, and then you're taking away aroma, which is one of the qualities. When you take away the aroma, then it's not earth anymore, because that's the distinguishing additional quality that earth has. So you take away that aroma, and then it becomes the previous one. You've taken away something from it, so you've subtracted it, and so it becomes the previous one, which is water. Water only has four. So it merges into it, it says. Certainly, when water loses its rasa, or taste, so in other words, this is a rasic class. Here's the word rasa. Certainly, when water loses its rasa, or taste, it contains only sound, touch, and form, thus becoming non-different from fire, which also contains those three qualities. So the wind takes, of course, I thought this was interesting. This, I never heard it. It's a wind, some wind, some cosmic wind removes the aroma from earth. You blow on something long enough and it doesn't smell anymore. So the wind takes away the fragrance from the earth. Let's see. So the wind takes away aroma to merge earth into water and takes away taste to merge water into fire. Then when the universal darkness removes form from fire, fire merges into air. Now, I thought this was interesting because generally here, this universal darkness must be really dark. Because usually when you have light, which is what fire is, you can't cover it with darkness, right? How can you cover light with darkness? You can't. The light lights up the darkness. But this universal darkness is so dark, we can say by personal experience, we're covered by it. It's so dense that it covers, it removes the quality of fire, which is form. In other words, what is form? Form is what you can see. So you can't see anything. So the fire then merges, then you just have air. Then space removes the sense of touch from air. I don't know if this means the element ether, it just says space. Sometimes ether is called space. Space then removes the sense of touch from air, and air merges into space. Well, yeah, so this is ether then. The Supreme Personality of Godhead as the time element removes sound from space, and space then merges into the false ego in the mode of ignorance from which it arose. So this is the winding up. Finally, false ego is merged into the mahatattva, which is merged into the unmanifest pradhan, and thus the universe is annihilated. So I just want to read one more thing, then I'll take some discussion if anybody's brain is still working. This is, I always have to chuckle when I read that, when I hear this. This is Lord Brahma speaking to Narada. It's just three verses. The last line makes me kind of smile, but here. It says, after the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karano Dakshai Vishnu, the Mahat Tattva, or the principles of material creation, take place, and time is manifested, and in course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. Material activities are caused by the Mahat Tattvas being agitated. At first, there is transformation of the modes of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, material knowledge, and the different activities of material knowledge come into play. Everyone's following along, I'm sure. The self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions, namely the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creations, and the intelligence that guides such activities. And here's the punchline. Narada, you are quite competent to understand this. I think, Nagaraja, probably not, but Narada, you're quite competent to understand this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada understood this. He wrote these purports. So any discussion, questions, comments, confusions? Hari Parayana Prabhu is going to clarify everything. Oh, Mataji over here.
I'm just trying to make sense of why is it that the intelligence, which is higher than the mind, is created from the mode of passion, which is lower than the mode of goodness, and the mind is created from the mind.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting the way it appears. Why? I don't know. let's see. What she's referring to is from the false ego comes from goodness, and then. The intelligence comes from passion, and then the mind comes too, right? The mind comes from, where was the mind? Oh, the mind, I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. False ego and mind both come from goodness. And then intelligence comes from passion. Why that is, I don't know, I could probably speculate, make some guess. You need the intelligence to do things, get things going, you might say. The intelligence is higher. But I don't know, we wouldn't really say that. Yeah, the whole idea that the mind is connected with goodness. Now, there is one place, where is that? It's in the context of one of these, where it says that the mind's nature is to meditate on the Supreme, something like that. So, of course, ultimately the mind is part of the soul. The soul is the intelligence, of course. So I don't know. I can't give a. Maybe in some commentary there's some explanation of why. I've also thought the same thing. It's interesting that the mind comes with the false ego, and then intelligence comes later. And the mind is connected with goodness. I'm not sure. Hari Prayana.
Can I quickly respond to her question?
Yeah.
And then I'll talk about my question. So it does not imply that the intelligence is in the mode of passion. Because the intelligence can be in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, and in the mode of ignorance. I think it's just the way these things are unfolding. It doesn't necessarily mean that the mind is always going to have qualities of goodness, and the intelligence is always going to be in the mode of passion. I don't think it implies qualities of these things. I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yes. I'm old. Sorry, I should take that back in this audience. So, I just wanted to point out how this is completely not in concordance with the material scientific knowledge. For example, from the mode of ignorance comes sound. The sound is the first thing that manifests. But in physics, there can be no sound without space.
Right.
In fact, sorry, I take that back. There can be no sound without
in a vacuum. There's no sound in a vacuum, right?
Yeah, there's no sound in a vacuum. There has to be air, for example, so that you can hear me. Or there has to be something, some material, solid, some molecules in space that sustain the sound. Frequently, we present the meaning of kham, ether, as space. Because Shabda K, the sound is supported in space. But according to physics, space is not enough to sustain sound. And we know this because Stephen Fry is at home. You know, vacuum is not going to propagate sound. So I'm just saying that there's a complete mismatch between this description.
Yeah, one of the reasons is we're using the same word for something different. Right. Because so when we say sound, we don't mean something that's propagated by waves through a medium. We're talking about something else, more subtle. Tanmatra, these are called. So it's some subtle thing. So that's why, just like the same thing when we talk about 8,400,000 species, I wrote an editorial on this. Our species have nothing to do with what they're talking about, species. It's a completely different thing. So when we say sound, we're really not meaning the same thing they mean when they say sound. And that's where. So when we talk about these things, it can really cause a lot of confusion.
Not only that, I think we have to know this, that these things are completely different from what we normally understand normally in the world right now. You know, what space is and what these are all subtle things.
Yeah. So if you meet a scientist, you just give him Hari Prayana Prabhu's phone number.
You know, I'm dealing with this from a little different perspective. These are all definitions, and definitions are constantly changing. I mean, the definitions is upheld by physics in 2016. I can guarantee it. Well, sorry, I can guarantee it. It ain't going to be the same definitions they're going to be, you know, upholding the standards in 2076. I mean, the definitions are constantly changing. Right now, I think Hari Prayana is talking about mechanical sound. And as she was mentioning, why would the Vedic sages speaking 2,000 years ago be obsessing us with the definitive definition of whatever words you're using to describe this phenomenon?
Yeah. I mean, there is definitely a problem with definitions in our words. We say sound and they say sound. It's a different thing we're talking about. Shabda. What is Shabda exactly? What's happening here? Another question? All right. Everyone is defeated. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.